Welcome back to hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. My guest is Jim Dye, the opinions editor of the News Gazette. And to show you what kind of a guy he is, he's on vacation and he came in to do this show.
I did. It's the truth. And I'm dressed for it, too.
You are. You got your sweats on. You must have been at the Y or someplace.
Well, I was walking my dog this morning. I'll go to the Y probably this afternoon sometime. But when I'm home and by myself, I don't feel the need to dress up. I'm not much for putting on airs, as Pappy Finn used to say.
Doing a little reading, I bet.
Have done a little reading. I'm reading a terrific book now on the Nuremberg Trials. I stumbled across it by accident. It's one of the best books I've ever read, by Joseph Persico. And I didn't know much about the Nuremberg Trials after World War II, but he wrote this thing about 20 years ago, and it's just really a pleasure to read. It's so informative and so well done that just good luck. Every now and then you find a really great book, and this is one of them. It's called Nuremberg by Joseph Persico.
And is this a big book?
I would say it's middling. It's not short by any stretch.
400 to 500 pages.
Well, it's about 450, but the print is small and the pages are long, but it's really well done.
A lot of stuff in there.
A lot of stuff in there. A lot of rivalries among the people that were supposed to be on the same side, and a lot of animosity among the defendants for each other. And of course, then there's a whole question about whether or not there even should have been a Nuremberg trial. You know,
how many people that were charged got off and got to flee to Brazil or someplace?
Well, I think the ones that got to flee to Brazil were the ones who were never taken into custody.
Oh, okay. Like, well, once they got them in custody, they pretty much put it to them.
And right? There were apparently trials all over the place, but the big Nuremberg trials were the top Nazi leaders like Goring and Jodl and Keitling, who were the military people. And then some people just kind of got swept up on it, although they certainly had their hands dirty with the whole slave labor program. But, Churchill said, what are we doing having trials for these people? We know what they did. We should take them out and shoot them. But some people thought the idea of having trials would seem more fair, although I think the results were probably pretty obvious before the first word was spoken.
Speaking of Churchill, there is a new movie that's opening Friday, I believe, and it's getting tremendous reviews. I saw a little clip of it the other day. It looks very good. Gary Oldham, I believe, is the name of the guy playing Churchill, and the way they're able to, those makeup people in Hollywood, the way they're able to transform somebody that doesn't look at all like Churchill into a guy that looks exactly like him. And his voice is tremendous. I don't go to many movies anymore, but with Netflix and the home box office and all those other things, you don't need to. But I think I'll try to get to this one.
Well, Churchill was such a unique character in history. It would be extremely difficult to portray yourself in a convincing way. But apparently, the actor in this case has done that. I have read mixed reviews of it. I'm going to go see it just because I'll have to see for myself and see what I think about it. So I'm looking forward to it. But, boy, it will not be an easy person to portray. However, I do think Churchill is one of the greatest men of the 20th century. He stood alone against the Hitlerian spread across Europe and constantly warned that, you know, we cannot ignore this problem. And he was proved to be right. And eventually he prevailed with a lot of help from the United States and the Soviet Union.
One of the things that he did that not too many people are aware of, he wrote a whole bunch of books.
Oh, he did. You know, the guy just
20
did,
or so.
The guy did so many things. It's like, how can one guy be this brilliant? You know, he wrote books like, like you and I read the newspaper. He would write a book, all kinds of books and all kinds of subjects. He was a masterful painter. He was a brilliant politician and I think he wrote news articles. I mean, the guy was just what can you say? He did everything. He was kind of like Theodore Roosevelt. He did everything.
We're at 356, just like you.
Inexhaustible energy. With a little help from drinking alcohol all day long.
No, it was those cigars that really propelled him.
Yeah, I guess. Well, he's a smoker and a drinker, that's for sure. Didn't seem to hurt him, man. He did it.
Well, good to talk to you about some of those historical things, but we got some stuff going on here in Champaign County. Champaign County Nursing Home.
Is the nursing home in trouble again? I thought it was all fixed.
Well, yeah, it's fixed all right. A former vendor filed suit against the home and the county, saying that they're owed $235,000 and pay up.
Well, this is the death of a thousand cuts. I mean, is anybody surprised that a nursing home that can't pay its bills constantly has to borrow money from the county to keep its doors open is being sued now because it doesn't have any money? I don't find that particularly persuasive. And I would hope that the people in charge of the nursing home, meaning those in the county board, could bring themselves to recognize that what can't go on forever will not go on forever, and they're better off cutting their losses and selling it now, as opposed to hanging on to this pipe dream of thinking that somehow things are going to turn around and the nursing home is going to become a financial success. I just don't see it happening.
The financially troubled nursing home, says a story by Tom Kasich this morning, owed $5.1 million to vendors and the county government as of December the 12th. $5.1 million.
Yeah. Well,
outside vendors were owed a total of $2.7 million, and it goes on and on and on with other big numbers. Home also owes about $2.4 million to various county government funds.
Well, it's not in as bad a shape as Illinois' public pension funds. Look at it that way. They owe $170 billion. This is chump change for the nursing home.
Yeah, look for a shining light someplace, but... I can't understand why there is any question about selling the nursing home.
Well, I think a handful of Democrats in the nursing home, I think that somehow this is proof, maintaining a nursing home is proof of the county's virtue, and that some people will not have any place to go. And I think that's wrong, because there are a lot of private nursing homes that can take these patients. And the nursing home population is down below what they would like it to be because of that competition from the private nursing home. So I think it's a pipe dream on their part, but they seem to be determined to play it out to the bitter end.
Well, at least a few of them say that during the vote, where it was overwhelmingly said by the general public that we should sell the nursing home, that people in their districts voted the other way.
Well, you know, people in their districts may have voted the other way, but, you know, when we hold elections... when you hold a countywide election and you have a result, and the result is one way, I don't think it's reasonable to say, well, people in this particular geographic section of the county didn't vote that way, so therefore we can't make the change. I mean, what's the point of having an election? To me, it's just an excuse because they want to hold on to the bitter end. That's not the way we do elections. So
we'll take a break here. We're coming right back. If you have any questions or comments for Jim Dye, we're at 356-9397, and our Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Back with Jim after this. We're back with Jim Dye from the News Gazette. Got his sweats on. He's ready to go out and take on the world out of the Y. You going to be in that stationary bike spinning thing?
I may do that. I've been swimming a lot lately. It's easier on your legs than on your back, so I've been doing a lot of swimming. I don't know what I'll do today. I have to see. You know, it's just serendipitous, Jim. I just go to the Y and say, what do I feel like today? Since I don't want to do other, I usually... pick the least offensive option at the moment.
I hear the Y has so many members, it's difficult to find a place to park out there.
Mark sometimes. Johnson has done such a fabulous job getting that Y built and turning it into a really beehive of activity that it's really one of the great accomplishments of Champaign-Urbana in the last 10 or 20 years, what he's done out there. And, yeah, the Y is a busy place. There's all kinds of programs and all kinds of people, and it's had a lot of fun to be out there. Well, just to see all the people.
You know, there's a lot of ways to sell, but Mark Johnson's way of selling has proved to be quite good. He just goes in and he just grabs people with his shoulders and throws them to the floor and pins them.
He pins them, does he? Okay, well, that would be effective with me. He hadn't done that. He just threatened to pin me. I threw in the towel immediately.
Interesting stories in the Chicago Tribune today. There's a real long one I have not read it entirely, but the headline is Rauner sees a second term in a different light. Governor says he can curtail the power of Madigan and Emanuel. And the governor then sought to provide answers, saying he's counting on the courts to give him several transformative wins over organized labor, allowing him to bypass Madigan's opposition.
Well, I don't think he can bypass Madigan's opposition. I think his references to the courts there are on target. There is a case pending now before the U.S. Supreme Court that if the plaintiffs are successful, would eliminate the requirement that union members have to join the union and have to pay union dues or pay the equivalent of union dues through the so-called, what is the word for it?
It's okay, you're on vacation.
I'm on vacation. It's the equivalent of union dues for people who don't wish to join. And if the court rules that the people are not required to pay dues to AFSCME in this particular case, it's an Illinois case, then that will eliminate, if assuming enough people don't want to join, it would eliminate a big source of Democratic Party money because AFSCME union dues, a lot of it goes to support Mike Madigan and Democratic candidates. So that would be a big thing, potentially. But as far as getting around Mike Madigan's power, I just don't see how you do it. He's in charge of the legislature, and whatever he doesn't want to happen will not happen, and we've seen that for the last 2 years. So if he thinks he can curtail Madigan, I mean, I wish him luck on that, because somebody needs to curtail Madigan, but given the nature of the division of powers in Illinois, I don't see how that happens.
Ron, or better devote some time to thinking about getting reelected.
Well, I think that's part of his campaign, is he's running against Mike Madigan, just like the Democratic candidate for governor J.B. Pritzker is running against
Donald Trump.
So it's he said, I'm running against Donald Trump because Bruce Rauner is really just a shill of Donald Trump.
We've got several calls here. Let's go to them with Kurt being first. Hi, Kurt.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing today?
We're fine. We're doing. We got two Jims in here. Yeah, we both responded to you, but we're both doing okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's my topic today. I heard you talking about the nursing home. Now, the Democrats on the board have said, well, our constituents voted against it. Well, the overall count was, let's sell them the nursing home. And they should be working together to sell the home, both the Democrats and the Republicans, try to go to the nonprofit first to sell it. I'm not against needy senior citizens or anybody needing medical help. But when the county can't afford it, it's that simple. Now, one of these Democrats that are running the board going to get that? What little dream world are they living in? That's my question.
Well, they're living in the world that says we can turn this thing around. Of course, they say that in the face of all of evidence that shows we can't. And so that's what their position is. People need this service, and we're going to fix it, and eventually things that are doing poorly now will be doing well then. Now, I don't think there's a lot of evidence to support that position, but that's their position.
Well, it doesn't look like there's any evidence that these people in the nursing home are going to be put out on the street.
No, that's not going to happen. I mean, that's just a scare story.
So if they've got that evidence, show me. If they can't sell the nursing home, and I think it's really stupid for them to be doing this.
Well, the problem is, as you said, the county can't afford it. The county doesn't have the money. The county is going to have to make cuts in its statutorily required duties and personnel to carry out those duties to maintain a nursing home, which is a purely optional venture for county government. The county is not required to have a nursing home. It did that as a voluntary thing, and other counties have done the same, and other counties like Vermilion County have discovered that it's too expensive and closed their nursing homes because it's such a drain on resources. But right now, the county board is not up to doing that.
Need to take a couple more calls here before the 10:30 news break. This is Marcia. Hello, Marcia.
Hi. You were talking, you couldn't think of the word that you were talking
about.
Oh,
fair share. Just came to me. Fair share, right?
Fair share.
Yeah,
that's
you go.
What it is.
Yeah.
And so many people don't like having to pay fair share. But if they didn't, they still I mean, when they pay fair share, they still reap the benefit.
Well, that's the argument the unions make, is that we represent all these people, and that they are beneficiaries of our representation, so they should have to carry some portion of the cost. That is what the law is right now. The challengers are contesting that on the basis that the money that they are required to give the unions is a violation of their First Amendment rights, because, and that takes preeminence. So it's a question of not whether the union will represent them. They think it's more important that their free speech rights are violated. So, yes, you're right. It is that, and that is the union's argument, and that's what has been the position since the Supreme Court ruled on this issue about 40 years ago.
And the place where I worked, we had so many people that came to me many times saying, now I understand why we need this union.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't mind paying their dues. But,
well, you know, one of the things about this is, and I don't really see, I mean, the unions don't want to lose this ability to compel people to pay, but I see no reason why people should flee the union if they, just because they don't have to pay union dues. I mean, a lot of people like to have union representation and happily pay their dues because they think it's worth it. The question is, can the union make the case why it's a good investment for people to be members, or can it not, and give people a free choice?
Let's go to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Well, fellas, the last time Jim Dye was on, you had the phone trouble.
We did, yeah. Hi, Eric. How you doing?
I'm good. My calling regarding this Ryan Jackson, who's in the employee of the newspaper, and his column appears in Living or the A&E or however you want to call it, section of the newspaper, right?
I believe, yes, he does.
And he came on originally as a humorist and, you know, clever, witty, you know, maybe like some of his humor. I mean, I was... But at least when it was confined to that, that's what it was. What it is basically an opinion. It's an op-ed piece. I would like to see him either some oversight on him to direct him back to where his talents are, because I don't know. I mean, we just had a little conversation a little while ago about what, you know, Justice Robert Steigman, someone called in and question his ability to comment on this or that. What I have a problem with is this column, and it's constantly. It's 90% of them are, you know, anti-Trump or anti-this or whatever it is. It always seems to come back to that recurrent theme.
Yeah. Okay. I get your point there. First of all, let me just say Ryan is not employed by the News Gazette. Ryan is a freelance columnist, and we carry his column. And yeah, he initially started off as a kind of a humorous type, and then he's joined the resistance, I guess. And so now he uses his platform to bash Trump.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, and so your point is, I guess, that he shouldn't be in the Living section. Maybe he should be in the editorial page.
I truly and honestly don't think he should be. And I mean, I wish somebody would come in and address that and say, look, we buy your column. Here's a couple of things you have your say. Let's get back to what we put you here for. And if not, maybe we'll find something else for you to do. I just can't see it. Anyway,
hey, gotta go, Eric. Thank you so much. Appreciate the call. I'll get to the news here in just a moment, but I suppose you can do that to local people that are freelancers, but you can't tell columnists what to write in their column, can you? I mean, the national people that you have, they think you're crazy if you call them up and say.
Yeah, it's a pretty touchy thing. A columnist is a columnist's words are the columnist's words, and if you're telling the columnist, well, say something else, then he's not really a columnist anymore. So, yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, he makes people angry, just like sometimes I make people angry. And, the guy who writes the Real Talk column on Sunday, and Leonard Pitts makes people angry. And I suppose when we run conservative columnists, they make people angry. I guess my only point would be, it's just an expression of a point of view. Try not to get too upset about it. And You know, go read something. Don't read something else that reflects the opposite opinion.
That's my take on the whole thing. I don't, you know, if I have somebody that I just detest and I don't want to read them anymore, I don't read them anymore.
See, that's why I gave up reading Lauren Tate 30 years ago.
I know. the guy is just, he keeps at it. One of these days he might write something we agree with, but it's been a long haul for him.
I do occasionally throw eggs at his car in the parking lot.
Yeah, Brian Barnhart is next. He has the news headlines. Back with Jim Dye after that. Welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Julia Reitz will be here tomorrow morning. I want to emphasize the fact that she will be here at 9 o'clock because we have a little different lineup tomorrow. We have Julia at from 9 to 10, then there will be about 30 minutes of open line. Then it will be time for Busey Money Talk. And on Friday, who knows what we're going to have? It's going to be what's going to happen. It's going to be a different kind of program. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of singers. We're going to play back some of the tape we have on some of the play-by-play that I did, some of the big games, and you can imagine which ones they are. And who knows what else? It'll be fun on Friday. Key is to be go out and have a nice time. We're not going to pay too much attention to anything else unless Trump does something, and we just have to
you never know,
to
it's
go
always
find
subject
out
to change
more about I'm gonna take a call here in just a moment, but I know you're not writing the editorials. Who writes these when you're gone?
Dan Corkery is my beleaguered replacement, and he's very unhappy about it, but he soldiers on.
he writes about the FCC and this terrific problem they've got going about on the internet, and we can talk about that a little bit. But seems the corporate giants, Comcast, AT&T, Google, Amazon, and some of those. Some people fear that they will now be able to deliver a death blow to consumers and aspiring entrepreneurs because of the government, because of Trump lifting the law that they kept them
net neutrality.
Net neutrality, but is a term for us trying to describe a little bit, keep things even, make sure everybody got treated the same on the internet. Was that
It's one of those complicated issues, and you know, I know there's been a lot of kind of hand-wringing about how the world's going to come to an end, but the only thing they're doing is reinstating the status quo that was in place in 2015. So we've only had net neutrality for 2 years, and I don't think things were too horrible before 2015. The internet has grown by leaps and bounds because it was unregulated, and I just don't see the problem that some of these people are suggesting will now become catastrophic. So, you know, this is like anything else in Washington right now. It's very political and very partisan. The FCC voted to repeal it by a 3-2 vote, 3 Republicans in favor, 2 Democrats against. So no, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Let's go to Richard. Hello, Richard.
Good morning, Mr. Turpin and Mr. Dye.
Good morning.
I've listened enough to the show. I haven't caught all the hour and 40 minutes, but I've listened enough that, and this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment to some of the people that call in. I know you're doing well, Jim, so I'm not going to ask you. But I have a phrase I use from time to time. Without work, we would never know when we're having fun. I think Mr. Dye would agree with this statement. Without Democrats, we would never know when we're hearing the truth. We've got that contrast that anything that comes out of a Democrat's mouth is probably a lie. But anyway, Mr. Dye, I want to reassure you, if Justice Steigman can't make it because he's not the smoothest talker on the radio program on Penny for Your Thoughts, I assure you, you're going to make it. You'll cut the mustard. You'll make it. And I enjoy listening to you. I very rarely call in when you're on the air with Jim, but I appreciate you. And Jim, I really appreciate the work that you did and the service you performed for us to let us call in. And sometimes we're controversial, but anyway, it's fun.
All right. Well, thank you, Richard. We appreciate your call.
Yeah, I want to say I appreciate his kind words, too. But you know what? He points out something that's always been my problem, timing. He says I have a great future in radio. Not at my age.
James is next. Hello, James.
Hey, how are you guys today?
We're good. How are you?
Well, not too terrible. Awful. Getting by.
Okay. What's up?
If you want to talk about nursing homes, I spent 5 months in rehab in Lincoln Manor Healthcare in Decatur, Illinois. And they weren't making payroll, but they somehow stayed open. Guys would call the state. The state would come in and mill around, and these people would act like they were doing something. And when the state left, back to the same old, same old. I just spent $35 a week on having people bring me food from the grocery store so there was food, so I could do my therapy and get out of there.
Yeah.
So I wound up calling the ombudsman, and now Lincoln Manor Healthcare is a vacant brick building, and they got fined $50,000, and they let people die in that place.
So well, you know, you certainly point out a problem, which is that, you know, some nursing homes are, well, all, in my view, all nursing homes are not places that you want to be. Sometimes you have to be there. In your case, you were injured, I guess, and had to do rehab. But no, that's a tough business, and if people don't do a good job, then there's certainly the capacity for great harm to be done. There's no question about that.
Well, I'm still alive, so.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. You know, the older you get, the more you think about that. And when I, you know, I hear that advertisement that says, the former TV host comes on and says, oh, we found a wonderful place. We call it a place for mom, you know. You hear that ad? Yeah. When I say that, I hear a place for me, and I say, whoa, I'm not so happy about that prospect.
Well, there are plenty of one of the reasons that the Champaign County Nursing Home, for example, is not doing well is the influx of all these other homes that are run by private corporations. Some have multiple ownerships. Some have multiple sites. Some, you know, there'll be. There'll be one company that's running 20 nursing homes, and they do a good job, and they stay in business. It's a little different than somebody depending on, I don't know, county money. And it just, my wife is out at the villa, and it's a terrific place. I think they're doing well. And there are plenty of others around. I think when the nursing home first started, Jim, there was not as many of these places where you could where somebody could go when they needed help.
Well, the nursing home has been around a long time, and I'm not completely familiar with the history, but I think the nursing home originally came about because there was a lack of places like that to care for people who needed that kind of care.
Toughest job in state government? That's the Tribune's editorial today. So what would you think?
The toughest job in state government? I would think being the head of DCFS. But
that's it.
Is it?
Look at that.
It ought to be.
You'd seen that before.
No, I didn't see that. But I got to tell you, I don't know how DCFS functions, because they deal with people that are in such weak states of life and in such terrible situations that it's every day that a disaster doesn't happen is kind of a miracle.
Can Beverly B.J. Walker succeed at the helm of DCFS?
My answer is no, she can't. Nobody can. Disasters will happen no matter what.
Nearly 6 months into the job of overseeing the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, Beverly B.J. Walker didn't hesitate when asked about her most difficult moments. She describes two cases, a troubled teen whose life DCFS could not straighten out, and a toddler who died after being left alone for days. So there's just a couple of examples of what they're dealing with.
Yeah, and I think that that statement explains the problem perfectly. DCFS involving a woman whose life DCFS could not straighten out. How do you straighten out other people's lives when they're a mess and people don't want to be straightened out or are incapable of straightening themselves out? You know, you expect too much from people. Expect too much from government when they think government's going to fix people or fix situations where all situations where children are left like this child was. And that is just such an obscenity to think that a child would die under circumstances like that. I mean, it's really heartbreaking, but that's the reality of life on the edge for some people. And the idea that the state is going to intervene in all cases and be successful in saving them is just, I think, unrealistic.
Tom Kasich writes about the Champaign County Board voting unanimously yesterday to join other Illinois counties that have hired law firms to pursue claims against drug makers believed to be responsible for the nation's opioid crisis. That's a very interesting story, isn't it?
It is, and recently in federal court, there was a case of a doctor who was in Decatur who was ended up being convicted and sentenced to prison because he was basically handing out opioids to anybody that came in and asked him. And I think that's obviously a real problem, but it's a problem on multiple ends. One, you have the demand. Two, you have doctors who, in some cases, are negligent, in other cases, are just doing it, I guess, for the money. Or in some cases, maybe falsely compassionate, who hand out these opioids to people who say they're in physical pain. And third, you have the manufacturers who, you know, who have an interest in selling as many pills as they can. And it's all combined for a disastrous situation where you have this medication addiction and people dying.
Well, they are, I guess I'm trying to know if lawsuits have actually been filed yet or not.
No, they're getting ready to go after these companies. I suppose in some cases they've been filed. In other cases they're just seeking
It's the company's fault, but not the only ones, right?
The tobacco. This is a repeat of the tobacco litigation where they're all going to gang up on some pharmaceutical company and try to extract billions of dollars in damages and divide it up. So,
all right.
This is a national class action lawsuit. That's very complicated stuff.
Let's go to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hello, Jim and Jim. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple questions. I'd like to go back to the fair share issue and Governor Rauner, and I have a couple questions and maybe one point.
All right, go ahead.
The question is, you know, I've never heard this asked, but the first thing is the term right to work. Indiana went to there. Wisconsin went that way. Governor Rauner is all about, you know, you guys were talking about Mike Madigan and something's got to be done about him, but just my opinion, if it wasn't for him, maybe my wages would be cut in half. My question is, first of all, if we were to go right to work or Governor Rauner had his way and prevailing rate went away, what would it be like for the people if he was to cut the wages in half? Now, that would be less taxes. Maybe it's good for businesses, but yet I don't understand what is so great about doing that kind of thing to improve the state.
Well, let me kind of respond there. You said he was to cut the wages in half. Well, first of all, Governor Rauner doesn't have the ability to cut anybody's wages. You'd be protected. I presume you're a union member. You have a union contract. You would continue to negotiate with your whoever you negotiate with. I don't know if you have a private employer, if you have if you work with a confederation of private employers, but.
No.
I don't know. What's your position? Do you work for, you're a member of a union, I presume?
Yes.
Okay, and so you would continue to operate under your contract and you would negotiate contracts like you did before. The right to work situation is, I'm sorry?
I'm not with the private organization, though.
Who are you with?
We negotiate.
Are you a public employee?
Through this, I'd rather not say. All I want to say is that it's negotiated and the wages are negotiated, and the fact that we have prevailing rate laws in the state, that's one of the things that he'd love to get rid of. You haven't heard about that?
No, no, I know. Well, I understand prevailing rate, but I don't really understand prevailing rate. I think prevailing, so I'm not going to get into that because I just don't understand the difference of,
okay.
of what prevailing
okay.
rate is.
Sorry.
But,
sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I mean, we're having an exchange here. That's fine. But, you know, the governor, well, it's a complicated issue, and right to work simply means that people aren't forced to join or pay money to unions if they don't want to. That's what it boils down to.
We took our final break right here, coming right back on Penny. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts, and we've been joined here by a man who was just talked about a little while ago. They said, sure enjoyed when you had Bill Black on the air. I said, well, they miss him over in Springfield because they don't sell nearly as many of the earmuffs that they used to have to keep from hearing your commentary. How are you doing, young man?
Jim, I'm doing fine.
What's with the beard?
Well, I had a new knee installed. I guess installed isn't the right word, but about a month ago, and I decided before the surgery I wasn't going to shave until the new knee was 100%. But anything was better than the old knee. But this is kind of a scraggly beard, but the best shave I ever had was on your program when I grew a beard that we didn't have a budget back in the day.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, we got a budget shortly thereafter.
That's right. We had a friend of mine to come out, and she did the shaving right on the air.
She did a great job, too.
You may have to call on her again.
I think I'd better.
Well, Jim and I have been discussing the ways of the world here, and we've got 2 or 3 minutes. Jim, one of the topics that we've been talking about is the situation in Springfield. And here's the Tribune today, Bill. I don't know if you saw it. Rauner sees a second term in a different light. The governor says he can curtail the power of Madigan.
Well,
what do you think?
I'm always amazed that people who have never been in any kind of governmental situation, not that that's the absolute prerequisite, but they go over there and think they can curtail this or they can stop that. They don't do their basic homework. You need 60 votes. And if you can't get 60 votes in the House and the majority in the Senate, you aren't going to do anything. You aren't going to defeat Michael Madigan, as Jim has written about several times in his district. And you alienate the very people that you have to go to get any of your initiatives done. And
you can't even get a bill to a committee without the Madigan's approval,
right? Oh, my
right?
goodness, yes. It's, I haven't read a book about Uncle Joe Cannon, the Speaker of the U.S. Congress, and an icon in Danville for years and years. He was the Committee on Rules in the U.S. Congress. He was the Committee on Assignment, and he several other titles. And if Joe Cannon said your bill wasn't going to be posted, it didn't mean anything. It was done. You weren't going to get anywhere. To this day, the rules that limit the Speaker's power in Congress are called the Cannon Rules. He was quite a guy, quite a rapscallion, but you know what they say. He was a rascal, but he was our rascal.
That's right. It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Right.
Jim, you have a question for Bill here in the last couple minutes?
Well, do you miss Springfield at all?
Yeah, a little bit. Toyed with the idea of trying to go back and heard from several people that I served with and said, no, you really don't want to do that.
Yeah, did you take temporary leave of your senses? You were so agitated.
Roger Eddy said he thought I was no more than temporary leave of senses.
I'm sure there was steam coming out of your ears. It was like the old days when you're going, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Speaker.
I don't know what's going to take place in Springfield. I thought that would be a temporary situation where they were feeling each other out and they would realize they had to get things done. I don't know if they're going to get anything done. And no matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, here comes another very wealthy man from Chicago who has no background in government, and he's going to do everything. And I love the commercials. Well, J.B. knows all about downstate. Okay.
He's been there once, right?
Well, he had a map in his hand at the time, you know.
You know, a reporter will ask him, as they often do, have you been to Lincoln County? And they usually say, no, but I intend to be there next week. Well, there is no Lincoln County. Many a politician has been caught by that.
They trick them, huh?
That's right.
Well, back when you started, what do you think the cost was? How much money did you have to run for governor back in then?
Oh, probably a million and a half.
That would do it, right?
I think it could run a credible campaign. I think this gubernatorial campaign in Illinois will set a national record. It'll be in the possibly hundreds of millions of dollars.
And that doesn't include the candidates are going to spread down throughout the system for various legislative
absolutely.
Races.
You know, that doesn't include the phone banks, the precinct workers, the all of the things you have to do now, people who run social media for the campaign. It's completely different.
Bill, good to see you. We are out of time. In fact, we're running over a little bit, but we appreciate you coming by. You look good, and one of these days you get that beard shaved off, and that will mean that you're ready to run a race.
I'm ready. I'm looking forward to the marathon. Jim, you're an icon, and we'll miss you a great deal, I can tell you that.
Oh, you're very kind. Jim Dye, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You're headed for the YMCA this afternoon?
Eventually, I'll get there.
He's training for the triathlon.
Well, Mark Johnson will get him into shape. There's no question about that.
I think about triathlons, but I would never attempt one.
Our time is up. We're joining the CBS News in progress, and we'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock with Julia Reitz here on WDWS.